Good evening, good morning, depending on when you're watching this. Welcome back, Hoops fans. Under the radar. Under the radar.
Oh, damn.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by John Stalica down there, right below me, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org. That's it, right?
Hey!
What?
You forgot about me again.
Yeah. And David Griggs, of course. Yes. This is our Under the Radar podcast, where we take a look at the 22 Under the Radar conferences. David, can you tell us what it means to be an Under the Radar conference?
Yes, it means you're essentially, well, there's two qualifiers, one in the biggest, and the only one that's mattered for the last couple years now, is you're not one of the 10 multi-bid leagues. The 10 multi-bid leagues are just that, the ones that typically send at least one or two, at least one team inside the bubble. They typically send multiple teams to the tournament. That's the five power conferences, the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12, along with the Atlantic 10, the Big East, the American, the Mountain West, albeit not very often lately, and the West Coast Conference. The other disqualifier is if you're ranked in one of the human polls, like the AP or the top 25, you are by definition on the radar and not under it.
And that applies to absolutely zero teams.
Right.
Year,
and it's, yeah.
Maybe next year.
Right. Yeah.
But what we do like to do is go through these 22 conferences, see what's going on in them, go over any news and notes from those conferences, take a look at anybody that we think may have a shot at potentially getting a at-large bid to the tournament, should they slip up in their conference tournaments. And we like to start with a feature conference of the night. And tonight we have a feature conference that, the past few years we had a few conferences that really have had some crazy close standings all year long. Leagues like the Colonial and the Big South have been just wild all season.
The Big South, yeah.
The Big South is one of the great ones the last couple of years. Again, this year, we'll get to them in a little bit. Rocco, I know you're out there on the West Coast. The conference has not been like that in the last few years, to my best of my memory, and suddenly is. Here's the Big West, and there's their standings on the screen. It's a mass chaos suddenly.
Yeah, it's been very chaotic, and there's a lot of the conferences actually came up a level this year. Last year was probably one of the worst years ever for the Big West. If you follow the Ken Pom conference ratings, they were 29th out of 32 last year. I don't even think they've had a year nearly that bad. But this year they're back in the top 20. I think they're number 19. There's just a lot of it's a great league to follow because when you go on the road, it's very hard to get a road win. There's only two teams that have done it three times. That would be Cal State Fullerton and Long Beach State. But even in the example of Long Beach State, they beat the three worst teams on the road. So you got to figure when the other top teams get the opportunity to play Riverside and Northridge on the road, they'll pick up some wins as well. Additionally, that playing into that home court advantage, you've got teams like UC Davis who have a 19-game home court winning streak going. You've got UC Santa Barbara, who is 9-0. If they can beat Hawaii at home tomorrow, they'll win their 10th in a row at home and tie a school record. And then we all know about Hawaii's great home court advantage that got a little bit exposed last week. So overall, I think it's going to go all the way down to the wire and maybe even three or four teams in the hunt.
But what's real strange here is one of the reasons you don't see UC Santa Barbara at the top of the standings, Cal Poly actually knocked them off at their place at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, this has always been a fun conference. Rocco mentioned how bad it was last year, and it was uncharacteristically bad. This conference has had teams end up on the 15 line before, but it's typically when – one of the weaker teams gets hot and wins the conference tournament. The team that's at the top of the conference is typically 12, 13-ish, maybe 14. And I think it's a little bit closer to that this year, although as you can see there, no one exactly running away from it. But I, for those of you that don't really follow the conference and maybe just watch it under the radar, this league, I'm not going to compare it to a power conference, but these programs are well supported. These are really healthy rivalries. These atmospheres are really good, like UC Davis, Long Beach, Santa Barbara, Hawaii, of course, all of them, Irvine. These are well supported programs. And like, if you went to one of those games or watched these games, it's like, man, they get a pretty good atmosphere going in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've actually been to a game at the Pyramid in Long Beach, and it gets crazy in there.
Yeah.
So you're definitely right about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a real fun league. And well, Rocco, what are you seeing now that coming out of this league now with this 16 grouping there within a game of each other in the loss column? I mean, especially a team like Irvine, who did nothing non-conference among those teams.
Well, Irvine, you know, they're competitive, so you can't overlook them. They've got a brutal week coming up. I think they're on the road against possibly the two best teams. I think they have the black and blue rivalry, I think, is tonight, as you guys featured today on the site. It's happy to see that. So they'll be at Long Beach State, and then later this week, I think they're at Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what I'm seeing right now is I test-wise think UCSB is the strongest team, and they've got the most going for them. They would also have the highest potential to get a 14, maybe even a 13 seed if they got on a hot streak. Outside of USB, Cal State Fullerton has really established themselves in great position because they've got two key road wins, including a huge one at Hawaii last week, and they have five more home games coming up. So Fullerton has got the best position. UCSB's probably got the best talent. And then everybody else, of course, is still in the mix in this top five or six.
Yeah, and it should be just a great season going ahead. There's the rest of the week's schedules on the screen there, including you already mentioned that big Hawaii-UCSB game tomorrow night, involving two of the teams with only two losses. Davis, a couple of road games as well coming up at Northridge and at Long Beach on Saturday. Another game between two of those four teams that are tied at the top there. Could be a real fun second half of the season here, though.
Really should be. And this conference tournament, is it once again in Anaheim?
In Anaheim again, yes. Top eight teams make it. So Poly and Riverside also.
Why not just take all nine, for Christ's sake? I mean, why not just have an 8-9 game?
No, somebody's going to get left out, either Poly or Riverside, most likely. Unless Northridge completely collapses.
I think the puppet is still hell-bent on getting a quintuple header in Anaheim. Is that right?
Well, quintuple headers are wonderful things. We haven't had one, I don't think, since the 13-team Big East, but it was wonderful. It was five games in one session. Conference USA 2 years ago had a 14-team format. One of the teams was ineligible. I think it was Southern Miss. They had 13 teams. We lobbied them. Remember that, Chad? We were calling the commissioner's office trying to get them to do the quintuple header. They wouldn't do it. The A-10 never did it either when they had a 13-team format.
Although we do got to give a little bit of credit to the Metro Atlantic, who has done not even a quintuple, but a sextuple header when you include the women's and men's games in the same day.
Yeah.
But
I got some news on that, men's
too. Yeah. the Big East quintuple header, it started at noon and it ended at 1 a.m, and it was fabulous.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Let's take a look through some of the other leagues here. Let's roll back over to the America East now, where Vermont, I think they also picked up a win tonight that did not show up on the screen. I thought it would. Maybe I've had some scoreboard problems.
Yeah, they won easily. They've been winning easily. Yeah, they've been winning easily all through conference play. Very, very dangerous Vermont team.
Well, here's the upcoming schedule there. Vermont at Binghamton tonight. That game has gone final. They did win it. Interesting road test, though, coming up on Saturday, John. They're at UMBC, who has looked like the second-best team in the conference. Maybe their toughest road game of the season. Maybe the trip to Albany they've got coming up, one of those two. Definitely. If they're going to slip up, this may be the game, though.
And UMBC also survived a tough test on the road tonight at Stony Brook, which – was the first time they had won there in a few tries. So this is definitely going to be Vermont's biggest hurdle as far as potentially running the table in conference play.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's a good game because the last time it was a little disappointing when they went to Vermont and it wasn't a game right off the bat. So hopefully UMBC is ready to take them on.
Yeah, and Vermont was without Anthony Lamb, but when the first matchup between these two teams also. So it's not like they even can say it. Hey, they had Lamb that game. They don't have him now.
Right.
In the A-Sun, Florida Gulf Coast, another team that just keeps winning games here and has is now 8-0 in conference play there, David.
Yeah, and again, you don't want to start counting this early, but with six games remaining, they have a two-game lead, so you got to figure four more wins. And they've played Jacksonville once or twice, I can't remember, but they're about – well, they're four wins away from absolutely locking it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that Jacksonville game they played on Saturday, it was a really good game. I think it was
tied
with a minute or so left, and – that surprised me because talent-wise, Florida Gulf Coast has a surplus of talent compared to Jacksonville's roster. I think Jacksonville's got a maybe one or two guys that can score, but it just shows that Gulf Coast can really fall apart defensively in certain cases. Yeah. They're just all about offense, and they're one of the most exciting teams in the entire country to watch, let alone under the radar. So for entertainment value purposes, it's probably best, you know, for the majority of fans out there that they find a way to get into the tournament. And, but this Lipscomb team is starting to bounce back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other night, one of many, many, many overtime games on Monday. That was the greatest night. It's been a while since I've had that much fun in the regular season, because we were all getting ready for the Hoops HD report. So we were all online and everybody seemed to be watching all the games. It was just a great night, maybe the best ever of under the radar basketball.
It was amazing.
Well, so we'll get to that Siena St. Peter's game in a bit, because that was a real game. But Gulf Coast Jacksonville round two is actually coming up this Saturday as they begin the second trip through the team the second time.
Gulf Coast is three wins away, because if they get that one, they got a three-game lead with seven. Yeah, and which means they'll have the tiebreaker. So Gulf Coast is actually getting very close to wrapping up home court here.
It's a 14-game schedule, so there's only six left to begin with for them. And then the last Lipscomb matchup's actually in Fort Myers, so. Uh-huh. They're definitely clearly in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Where do we go next? How about here we go, John? How about the Big Sky? We talked about another team that's continues to roll through its conference. How about this Montana team? Again, a two-game lead in their conference.
Yeah, I would hope they would be rolling, considering they have the easiest double as far as Southern Utah and Northern Arizona goes. Right now, it's Eastern Washington has also entered the fray as far as challenging them along with Weber State and Idaho. But as far as the aforementioned Eagles, they picked up nice wins at home against Northern Colorado and North Dakota.
What has happened to Portland State? This was a team that had a fantastic November. Unfortunately, December, January, and it have not been so good.
No, they haven't. If you look, they still have the third best RPI in the conference, but there they are, 3-5 in
conference
play, and it's just barring a run in the conference tournament, they may have to do it out of the eight seed. They may have to play an opening round game in the conference. They will most likely have to play an opening round game in the conference tournament.
Yeah,
as long as they don't finish fifth or worse there.
Right.
The upcoming schedule here for the Big Sky: Montana on the road at Northern Colorado and at North Dakota this week. So it's a little bit of a couple of road tests here, at least for the Grizz up there.
Yep, and but again, even if they drop one of those, I still think they're in pretty good shape. They've looked really good so far. Coincidentally. Have you ever tried to watch like those Idaho games on whatever the hell TV package that is? It's best just to go to the Big South website, public service announcement. There's a better link with a stream that doesn't go dark every 30 seconds.
Yeah, Pluto.tv.
Pluto! Oh, Lord!
It's the new streaming site for the Big Sky, which always had some fairly weak quality streaming to begin with. This was a mistake by the conference.
Yes. Absolute
mistake. Make a deal with ESPN3. Make a deal with a net with something like Stadium. You get some quality streams.
Hey, this Pluto stuff. We'll send Rocco out with a smartphone.
Let's do it. I'm in.
All right, Rocco, you got six games for Thursday night. Can you hit them all?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to. Can we start them at 9 in the morning and end at 1 in the morning? I think I can do it.
Yeah. But BigSky.tv, actually, I actually did find live streams on there, and they were working. So you didn't have to download the Pluto thing. And don't mess with Pluto. It's not worth it. I'm sure the Big Sky loves this criticism, but what the hell, Veronica?
We mentioned them at the top of the show here, Rocco. We were talking about how conferences with crazy standings, but here they are, the Big South. Five teams within a game of first place, and in High Point, you go six teams deep in this conference. Liberty, I think, was a pretty good team. There they are in seventh even. It's wide open again.
It is. And the funny thing is Radford lost to Charleston Southern at home. So, I wanted to come out and say, unlike the Big West, who I think really has six teams that could win that auto bid, this league actually probably maybe has seven, but maybe even eight with Charleston Southern showing their ability. Longwood actually got hot for a week or two. So who knows? Maybe we should just open it up to Presby too and say
well,
it's a
don't forget, Presby had that huge non-conference win against UNC, a very good UNC Greensboro team. One of the most exciting calls of the season.
One of the games of the year for sure.
Oh, God. That was so awesome.
Yeah, it's entirely unpredictable. I've tried to predict this league on multiple weeks, and I consistently fail.
There's a lot of games coming up here Thursday, Saturday, and next week they play Wednesday. So we got 15 games on this on the screen there. John, what are you looking forward to here? All of them?
Yep. Also trying to see if even a team like Liberty can make another move with Winthrop coming into town, and then they also make trips to Longwood and Charleston Southern. So they're probably not going to challenge for the regular season title, but certainly getting back towards the possibly the top half here.
Saturday is Radford Winthrop, I think, will be probably the best game on here.
And that one's – well, I mean, again, they're tied for first place along with half the conference. But, I mean, that's going to go a long way to deciding who gets to host the conference tournament. And, we will continue to say it. When you play at campus sites, it adds stakes to the regular season that the Horizon League used to have and no longer has, and that this conference now has that they didn't used to have. That's a big game. That Radford-Winthrop game is really big.
Yep.
Let's jump over to the Colonial, and this was the other conference we mentioned. Here's a three-way tie in first place now in the Colonial. Charleston, Bill and Mary, Northeastern, Hofstra, even Towson and Elon still in contention here. David, we did see Towson beat Bill and Mary this week. We saw just see a lot of good games in this league, quite honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's in one sense, it's been great. It's been kind of unfortunate because we thought that, like, College of Charleston and maybe even Hofstra could run away from it and maybe play their way inside the bubble. That went away a long time ago, I think. But the good side is that we've seen a lot of exciting and competitive games. Tournaments in Charleston, it's at a predetermined site. Again, like we just said, I'm not the biggest fan of that, but still some pretty good games going on here.
And you're the luckiest team in the country here in this conference with Bill and William and Mary. We'll see if that luck holds up because they've been very unlucky in the Colonial Tournament, especially when they've had some really good teams the past few years. They're still stuck on that short list of now four teams that have been members of D1 since its inception. I've never made the NCAA tournament, so maybe they can finally break through.
Yeah, I'll say this for William and Mary. When they lose, they do not mess around.
I think this is the week you have to look at College of Charleston because it seems like they're finally starting to win some games away from home, and now they get two major tests with Northeastern and Hofstra looming.
Yeah, if they get both of those, they should be able to put some distance between themselves and everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely huge week for Charleston coming up. Rocco, let's take a look here at Conference USA, where we're kind of form kind of held it. Everybody just kind of won this week. Not much exciting news in terms of the scores, was there?
Well, I thought the Marshall Western Kentucky game was really, really well played. I think Marshall led a lot of the second half, and Western Kentucky tied it up with about 3 minutes left, and then Marshall never scored again, or maybe they scored two points. But that was actually a really good game to watch. Outside of that, a little bit less important, North Texas FIU was a great game. But, yeah, I mean, that was the real only significant action was WKU Marshall. This is probably the premier UTR conference this year, just because we have some at-large potentials here. I mean, I was looking pretty closely at Middle Tennessee earlier today. They're not out of it for an at-large, I don't think, because if they can, get another win against Western Kentucky, they've got a really great RPI. I think they're number 23 or top 25, I'm pretty sure. You can't count them out. If they beat Western Kentucky, let's say on March 1st, and then lost to Western Kentucky in the finals, they're going to be a hotly debated team going into the Selection Sunday.
A team like UAB seemed to be a bit of a sleeper, but they kept hitting the snooze button against Texas San Antonio and never woke up in that one.
Right. They've been kind of disappointing this year, but I agree with Rocco. I would like to think that the committee would take them, and I'm still kind of – salty at what they did with Wilmington and Middle Tennessee a year ago when I thought they clearly had profiles, especially when you looked at the road games they won. Now, they weren't beating the top 50 teams, and maybe that's changed a little bit now that they've done the team sheets differently. But these are teams that went out and won on the road against it places that are really hard to win at. And I would like to think that if Middle beats Western Kentucky twice and loses to them in the final, you could say, well, they beat them twice during the year. They didn't need to do for a third time what they had already done twice. I'd like to think the committee would take them. Both teams – and that's the other thing. The overall strength of schedule for both Western Kentucky and Middle is pretty good. Old Dominion, a team that I kind of had written off, as funny as that is, after they lost at home to Western Kentucky – that's their only loss, and their strength of schedule is around 3,000 or whatever it is. It's pretty bad. It's not as bad as Georgetown, but they're really good too. So you got three really good teams that if they play their way into the semis, whoever comes out of that is going to be really dangerous, and more than one gets in.
Let me ask you the reverse of the thing we just said about Middle Tennessee. Let's say Western wins the final matchup of the two at Middle on March 1st. Then Middle wins the conference championship game against Western. Can Western get in with an at-large bid? But look at those four quadrant four losses. That's the problem on Western's profile.
It is. And again, at Whiskey, although they got absolutely robbed in that one, and how tragic would it be if that ends up playing a role in keeping them out? But I would like to think the committee would look at them. It's a healthy RPI. They did beat SMU away from home. They won at Old Dominion and Marshall. I think those teams have a combined total of three losses. Two of them are to this team, and the win at Austin Peay is actually not looking bad now.
I would point to the Middle sweep of golf of two games against Gulf Coast before I point to the Austin Peay win by Western, but that's just me.
Austin Peay's just a game out of first in the we'll get to the OVC here in a little bit.
Chad and David, what I'd like to just mention is if either of these teams get to that point and they win out from here, besides that matchup on March 1st, let's just imagine we're in that situation. What the committee has shown over the last 12 years or so is that the key statistic to, if there is one, to separate bubble teams is non-conference strength of schedule, which Chad just had it pulled up. Right now, Tennessee is number four in the nation, and Western Kentucky is number 21. And that, if you look at some of these other bubble teams right now, is a huge outlier. Like, if you look at Virginia Tech, they're close to 300. Kansas State is 330. Boise State's 175. We've got a couple teams floating around the bubble right now that are 270s. I mean, these teams are going to completely stand out in that department, and you don't have a lot resume-wise to compare, so it really will be a key tiebreaker. So I'm really interested we can get to that stage and have that conversation.
I hope you're right. It just seems like for the last 2 years – now, I know that Monmouth, there were reasons not to take them 2 years ago. That I think they had three losses outside the top 200. But their out-of-conference schedule was amazing. It was a lot better than Jesus, Tulsa.
It was. Yeah. And I think a lot of this new model is hoping to make sure they don't make that mistake again.
Yeah.
We can only hope for the best. They can easily screw these teams over. No doubt about it. But there has been a consistency there that no team, I read a stat, no team over 250 non-conference strength of schedule has been a 10 seed or higher. So if they're going to get in with that, yeah, with their, since Air Force, I think in 2004 when they were a 13 seed. So if they're going to get in with a 250 RPI, when I'm talking about VTech, K-State, some of these other teams in that range, they're going to need to be a 9 seed or above just based on historicals. So interesting to think about.
And do you think, and again, I know you follow this probably more closely than the rest of us do, but do you think when Greg Shaheen left – that the under-the-radar conferences got a little bit less love and it became top 50. I mean, last year I was convinced that that's all they did was count the number of top 50 wins. Yeah, they didn't look at how hard it was to maybe beat the 80th team on the road when that team only lost one or two other home games. Well, whereas under Shaheen, I think they did.
Let me jump in here. I think that's one of the things that this new quadrant or tiered team sheet is doing is trying to bring the attention to, hey, a road win against a 75 is in the same ballpark as a home win against a 30 even.
It absolutely is, yeah.
And now is with those dudes grouped together, so maybe we're going to get more recognition of that this year than we have the past few years, at least hopefully.
And you can convince me of that, David. I mean, there's no way we're going to be able to prove that either way, but it sure feels that way. And I know another big criteria is just playing, even if you don't win them all, just playing a lot of road games. So when you look at like Michigan State or a team like that only went on the road once or maybe not even at all in non-conference, that's actually going to really hurt them because that's also been a tiebreaker. And I know these mid-major teams, especially Middle and Western, have gone away from home quite a bit before the conference started.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get rolling through some of these leagues again here. Just note that Conference USA, yep, big upcoming game coming up tomorrow night. Middle is at Old Dominion. That's their toughest. That's the game that Middle's got to get through if we want these two teams to win out until March 1st. That's probably the biggest chance for either one of these teams to go down here, just looking at these schedules. But John, let's head over to the Horizon League. You had a chance to go and check out Wright State in person, I believe, this past week. Did you not?
Yeah, that was for their Sunday game against Oakland, and it was pretty apparent to see that even though Wright State lost a couple key seniors from last year, they had three freshmen waiting in the wings, and one of them, the name is escaping me at the moment, Loudon Love, actually had 18 points and 17 rebounds in their win against Oakland. He actually had a double-double at halftime, and thanks to NKU also losing a game against Oakland, Wright State is back in the driver's seat as far as the race goes here.
I guess my only thought when I look at this conference, David, is I just think Oakland is a sleeping giant, and I think that's a team that if you have to ask me who's going to win the conference tournament, even out of a four-seed spot where they are right now, I would still put my money on Oakland.
Well, you don't think – I mean, it's going to be hard going to Wright State to win that. Never mind.
They'll also have the home court advantage being in Michigan. Unless they get a matchup with Detroit, they'll have a home court advantage. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. How many games has Oakland won in Detroit in this new incarnation of Horizon?
Zero.
Zero.
But how, again, good job, Horizon League. So if Wright State finishes first, they're going to be playing a semifinal game at, you know, that's what happened to Monmouth the last couple years in the Metro Atlantic, having to play a semifinal road game as the top seed. Good job.
Congrats, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of Wright State's week up ahead here, Rocco, they're at Cleveland State and hosting Youngstown, so it should be a fairly easy week for the Raiders this week.
Agreed. And I wanted to pay attention to Friday's game with Illinois, Chicago, and Oakland. Illinois, Chicago, out of their last eight games, they've only lost once. They won the other seven, and the one loss was to Oakland. So you know they'll be hungry to try to steal that one.
All right, well, let's move over. Moving on over to the Ivy League, where we have finally, after this week, gotten through the partial conference play section of the season. We're going to have everybody playing two games per weekend here and now until we're done, plus an extra Penn-Princeton game to come, I believe, next week as well, though. But David, Harvard kind of bouncing back from a disappointing conference at 4-0, right?
Yeah, kind of bouncing back. Loyola just missed a shot at the buzzer that would have won. We'll get to the Missouri Valley here in a second. But, yeah,
live on tape delay.
But Harvard was a team that we were expecting a lot out of, top 40 good. And they have been maybe top 400 good, if that. But here they are getting four conference wins. Is their ceiling – I know that they're not going to get anywhere near the tournament without the auto bid, but – is this a potentially dangerous team? Because is their ceiling still a top 40 ceiling? I know you were even bigger on them than I was. But, where was this before now?
I don't know. Rocco, maybe you have thoughts on that. But I think this Harvard team is just, beating up on some pretty weak Ivy League competition, and that's it so far. And they may start falling apart again when they get Penn and Princeton.
Yeah, Chad, I'm more on your side on that. The Yale game last week, it's a good win to win on the road in such a great rivalry, but Mekhi Mason is still not healthy. I think he came back for a game or two, and then he missed that one. So obviously Yale's a much different team without him. I'm still giving Penn the nod based on being the most consistent team, but I would, if I had to bet on anybody, I'd bet on Princeton to be the number one seed.
And here is the upcoming schedule. You see, we do have, in addition to everybody playing Friday, Saturday, like we will do throughout the rest of the season, we have that bonus Penn-Princeton game coming up on Tuesday. Stalika, you think that could be a key game here in determining who the one seed is in the conference?
Well, it could also be pivotal as who's going to be that, either the two or the three, because remember, Harvard's already got the half-game lead. But if Brown or Yale can pick off a game this weekend, that could also be huge as far as who would be the fourth team in among that group as well.
You're right. Brown and Yale at the Penn with the Penn-Princeton road trip this weekend. If we get a single upset there, it could definitely change the standings here. Mm-hmm. Rocco, the Metro Atlantic, should we talk about what happened Monday night?
Absolutely. I'm glad you called on me.
And I think that we got two games to talk about, because we also had an overtime game between Fairfield and Iona that ended in triple digits. And we had a triple overtime game between Siena and St. Peter's that if you took the over in the game in Vegas, you still lost.
I feel lucky to be called on them for this conference. So I happened to just be tuning in at the beginning of the St. Peter's game for no other reason than me and a couple of friends back home do a daily competition where one person chooses a game, and we put a friendly pick in. And the guy who chose it chose Siena St. Peter's. So I was like, all right, I got to watch this. And it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe I knew St. Peter's has one of the best defenses in the country. Their coach is really known for it. But to be that low scoring was, I mean, you have to try to be that bad. It was remarkable. And then I had the Fairfield-Iona game side by side. And I think at one point they were in the mid-80s in that game, and they had just hit the 30s in the Siena. So it was truly unbelievable. Not to mention the other under-the-radar games that you mentioned earlier that went into overtime at all at the same time.
Yeah.
It was chaos.
Absolutely.
It was. Also had another remarkable fact that Chad pointed out at the beginning of triple overtime. St. Peter's actually had more timeouts than they started the game with.
Right. Yeah, five timeouts. Yeah.
Yeah.
This game. Was tied at 40-40 after 40 minutes, at 45-45 after 45 minutes, at 50-50 after 50 minutes. It was Crazy, yeah. David. Absolute crazy.
We didn't get a quadrupler, but this one might have to get honorary mention with the other two that we've had because it was just so crazy.
And I got to say the other thing now, David. This is the longest we've ever spent at the end of January speaking about a game between the 9th and 11th place teams in any under radar.
Yeah. Oh, we're going deep under the radar.
Did you guys see Jimmy Pastos, his shirt after the game? I wish somebody had a picture pulled up. It looked like he played. It looked like he played. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, by the way, Ryder is now 9-2, although still tied in the loss column with Canisius, but has played two more games. And here's the upcoming schedule. Ryder is at Quinnipiac this weekend, while Canisius is at Marist at St. Peter's. So road test for the top couple of teams here. On that end of the conference, John, what is it? Ryder's now your team to beat?
I'm still keeping an eye on Canisius, but the metrics would certainly fall in favor of Ryder here.
Yeah, I like Ryder.
Rocco, you have a little bit of news about the Metro Atlantic tournament?
Yeah, so last week they played a triple header. I believe it was at Nassau Coliseum out in Long Island. Yes. And the reason for that is it sounds like the rest of the conference outside of Siena is upset with the conference tournament location being at the Pepsi Center every year in Albany.
Amazingly, Siena doesn't have an issue with it.
They do not have an issue. So they use that triple header. I haven't heard the results, Chad. I hope you can maybe update us since you're out there on how that turnout was. I know they had the big Iona-Manhattan game there. But they're also looking at Atlantic City at the Boardwalk Hall, I believe it's called. This would take effect in 2019. So it sounds like those are the two finalists.
I got an idea.
I hope they go with Atlantic City. That's right in my backyard here, and I can report live from,
no,
from that'd those be games.
Well, but, that would, oh, we had – oh, if you missed it, we were live from the Metro Atlantic tournament at the untelevised opening round. We need to dig that up. But I don't know. I got a better idea. Why not play it at Campus Sites?
Well, as someone who's been to Boardwalk Hall for a conference tournament when the A-10 was there, I hope they have a fire extinguisher because I remember a Xavier Dayton game getting delayed for about 10 minutes because a pizza caught fire in one of the kitchen areas.
Hey, come on. Let's move on. Let's keep going. David, the Mid-American Conference, we saw the pretty shocking upset, I thought, at least, when Kent State knocked off Buffalo Tuesday night. In a game that Buffalo was up more game, and Kent just came out of nowhere to steal it.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo was cruising to the point to where there was so much else going on, you kind of changed the channel and just kind of kept an eye on the score. But Kent came roaring back. It was a really intense game. There was a sort of a dust-up. I don't want to call it a fight because that overstates it. At the end of the game, and with a three-point difference, I think at least one or two players were ejected. And I remember thinking, how are they – the margin is 3 points. How are they going to manage this? Is Buffalo going to get to go to the free throw line and shoot free throws and get a chance to win here? But they didn't. So I think it was offsetting I guess you would call it offsetting technicals, and then Kent State held on the win. I still really like this Buffalo team. Their RPI was so high that you had to wonder, do they have a chance at getting selected if they don't win the conference tournament? But I think this really, really ends whatever slim chances they had. But, God, their RPI was. I still is.
Well, Rocco, I mean, they maintained – Yeah, they maintain not only their lead in the conference, but they also hold the tiebreaker over Toledo for the one seed. But it could have been tied up, except the fact that Toledo then lost to what is now a shorthanded Ball State team.
Yeah, impressive. Taylor Persons, you know, I think everybody knows the name now after he had that huge game-winning three-pointer at Notre Dame in the beginning of the year when Notre Dame was ranked in the top 10. I got to see him in person against Ohio, and he had another outstanding game, 18 points, 8 boards, 8 assists. But the reason I want to bring him up is that this guy is we used to have the Shaq of the MAC. I think it was Gary Trent back in the day. This guy's like the pest of the MAC because he gets into everybody's head. He frustrates the other team. He gets in the lane. He picks fights. Then he backs away. Kind of like a I don't want to say Marshall Henderson, but a little bit of that flavor from Ole Miss. But I mean, he really gets under the other team's skin, and I saw that start happening last night at Toledo, and that game was at Toledo. Pretty impressive. That psychological effect took Toledo their rhythm because they were one of the hottest teams in the country coming in.
Yeah, and there's the upcoming schedule on the screen here, including Western Michigan, Buffalo, and a national TV game coming up Friday night. I think the first game between those two teams was. John, over in the Mideastern Athletic Conference, we may have a major story developing here with the Savannah State Tigers, ineligible for the tournament, on the way down potentially after next season to D2, and tied for first place.
Yeah, one of their wins was going to be a pretty easy one against Delaware State, a team that we'll probably be addressing later on in March. But at the same time, the beat keeps rolling along. If you're a team like NC A&T, who also beat their in-state rival NC Central at home.
But David, how about Savannah State? I mean, could this become one of the biggest stories if they could win the regular season title here?
I am going to do everything I can to make it a big story. I'm calling everyone I know because I just hate that they're on an APR ban because, for starters, nobody that's on the team now is ineligible. Like, nobody playing is ineligible to play, yet they can't play because of people that weren't eligible before. And I think a lot of that was due to various – it's a low resource school. I just don't think the monitoring what it needed to be to get the APR where it was. You would like to see them be given some sort of reprieve. We've seen it before in some of these HBCUs and really low resource schools. But yeah, I mean, it's really a fascinating story. The idea that they're going to be transitioning down after next season or plan to. The one caveat to that was minus a substantial amount of income, and yet here they are ineligible on top of looking at transitioning down, and they're tied for first. That's crazy.
Actually, they're going to be outright in first place in about 10 minutes here. They currently have a 14-point lead in their game at FAMU that's going on right now as we record this. So that's going to be 7-1 at the end of the day. So
yeah,
congrats to them there. But let's take a look at a conference. I just saw a big upset tonight, Rocco, the Missouri Valley Conference. Not even on the screen yet, but Loyola Chicago did fall by 2 after trying to make a furious comeback, but coming up short against Bradley tonight.
Yeah, I would argue with that a little bit. I thought that was more of a coin flip. Bradley came in 11-0, as John pointed out before the show tonight, 10-0 against D1 schools in Carver Arena. And Bradley's got a developed roster. I had a chance to do some digging and research them. I know the last 2 years have been a real struggle for them, but they've done a great job. Brian Wardle's the coach there, of not messing around with transfers and just keeping everybody in house. And it's finally paying off here in year 3. They've got a legitimate team that could definitely win the tournament in Arch Madness. They controlled most of the game tonight. I know Loyola made a late rally. And don't get me wrong, Loyola is a great team, one of my favorite under-the-radar teams this year. But I definitely wouldn't call it any real upset, okay, in my opinion, at least. And now we've got a pretty good race. We've got 3 losses for Chicago now.
Well, John, you're circling Southern Illinois. You want to talk about this Salukis here?
Yep, I mean, they've gotten 2 pretty significant road wins against Missouri State and Drake. Both the Bears and the Bulldogs were near the top of the Missouri Valley, but both teams seem to have gotten into hibernation of late.
Time out. Missouri State has gone completely down the toilet. The Drake win, I'll give you. But Missouri State, I've got no love left for this team. They can't beat anybody right now. But go ahead.
Barry, John, I have a thought as soon as he's done.
No, go ahead, Poppet.
Okay, Barry Hansen, the current Southern Illinois coach, former Missouri State coach, a year or two ago, I think it was, he described his team's shooting as we couldn't hit a bull in the butt with a bass fiddle, which is, I don't even know what that means, but I think it's the greatest soundbite I've ever heard in my life.
Missouri State at Loyola Chicago coming up on Saturday. That was a game 2 or 3 weeks ago I would have been circling. I could see a complete blowout here now, that Rocco, the way that this Missouri State team is playing.
I think, yeah, if you, Missouri State, yeah, that should be a complete blowout. The wheels have fallen off. Coach Lusk, everybody wants him out, according to social media. And I know it was a rough offseason for him, too, to get ready. And Alize Johnson, the preseason player of the year, you know, gave the Bears a lot of excitement. They did well up until a couple weeks ago, and now the wheels are off. So doesn't look good for them. They'll probably be looking for a coach this offseason. And Loyola Chicago Drake rematch could be good. I'm not giving up on Drake, but reality has started to set in for the Bulldogs.
Okay. David, one of our favorite conferences, the Northeast Conference, and we're starting to see a team that might be ready to pull away up here at the top of the standings, do you think?
Yeah, Wagner, real nice, we liked them.
You know, I mean, but look at what they did this week, winning at SFPA and at Robert Morris week. Huge, huge Wagner.
Yeah, and you know, a real good week for them. They've had a really good season. We liked them about as much as you can like anybody from this conference. Prior to conference play beginning, in a very, very, very rare thing here, they have cracked the top 100 of the RPI.
Yes. And Joby's Nitty Gritties. Look at that.
Oh, wow. So are they maybe looking at not the – I mean, they certainly should be inside the first four with that if they can hold on and get there.
Well, let me ask this question. If they don't lose again until – win the rest of the regular season, win the conference tournament, and they just passed their two toughest road tests this week, could be looking at a 15 line, maybe even total.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they might be inside the bubble. Yeah.
But I think if you look at a 15 seed here.
Yeah, I mean, they could be.
Definitely, especially when you start to factor in, we'll probably get a couple surprise upsets, maybe a team or two with a losing record that gets a bid.
Yeah. You know,
that'll push them up even higher.
And on that note, they're going to go out this week and lose to both Central Connecticut and SFBK.
Yeah, Central Connecticut, Daniel, I mean, you know, kind of a good story there, a bit of a turnaround. One of the worst programs on the planet, suddenly, at least in the middle of the pack here. So,
and Daniel Marshall, the coach there?
Yeah, Daniel Marshall's the coach. He's doing a really good job.
Yeah.
After he had to miss the first few games of the season with some school issues, but.
Yeah, he did, but. You know, one of the best coaches in the state of Connecticut, maybe the best.
David, I know you want to do an hour or two about Austin Peay basketball. So now that we're in Ohio Valley, go ahead. I'll go take a break. It's all you.
Well, there we go. Yeah, you know, Belmont and Murray State kind of running away with things here. And again, like Chad has it all in one division, but I still think they go by two. So both of them looking to be at the top of the ladder. I still Jack State team, although not as much as I like Murray and Belmont.
David, I am back, and no, they got rid of divisional play in the Ohio
Valley. Yeah, so they have divisional play, and
right. Okay, never mind then. Belmont 9-1, Murray State 8-2, clearly a step above everybody else in the conference. But Rocco, here comes the upcoming schedule. Is there any specific games you're looking forward to this week in this league?
Well, Belmont's got to go to that snake pit of Morehead State on Saturday. And I know they're having a down year, but watch out for Morehead. You never know.
Morehead must lead the nation in games lost by fewer than 10 points. It's been...
But to be fair to Morehead, unlike St. John's, they're actually winning a couple of these close games at the end.
But otherwise, John, the top two. Yeah.
Well, for that, I want to head over to the Patriot League, where we saw Bucknell sweat out.
Well, no, we didn't.
Army really bad.
No, well, we didn't. For those of you because that, none of us saw any such thing. Okay, yes, sorry, go ahead.
John. Awful street problems in the Patriot League tonight. However, Bucknell made a nice comeback, forced overtime, ran away in overtime, but did beat Army. Now 10-1 in league, and I guess Rocco, how dangerous is this Bucknell team when we get to the NCAA tournament? Should they get that bid?
I think they're fairly dangerous. They are just recently fully healthy for the first time, and they're starting to play like the team we thought they would be. And I thought they would cruise tonight, so I was really surprised that Army took it to them that way. But give Bucknell credit for not backing down and finding a way to rally and get that win. I know when they're fully healthy, they must realize that their superior, their talent is superior to the rest of the league. And so it's got to be hard at a certain point, especially this time of year, to get up for every single opponent. I know conference tournament wise, they should be sharp. I think they'll play at home. And and I think they'll be dangerous for a 2 or a 3 seed or maybe even a 4 seed.
But probably not a 4 seed. Part of it was probably also an emotional letdown because they did have a rather decisive win at the Roof on Sunday, which gave them some separation from BU.
Yeah, and that was a good – I mean, they looked really good in that game. And watching that game, you're just like, oh, man, this is the team that, squeezed Virginia Tech last year, almost beating them. And this is who we thought they were going to be. And then tonight – I mean, the rumor was they struggled with Army, although when I tried to log on and watch it, I couldn't. But the rumor was it was a close game.
They're going to be hosting Lafayette and at Lehigh this week. Should be 2 more wins, although I think Lehigh the first time around is the team that beat them at the start of the season, if I'm correct.
I think that's right, yeah. No, it was Boston. It was Boston.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Boston. But one of the – I think Lehigh gave them a real tough, close game that they pulled out earlier.
That's when I made the tweet about how Bucknell was hands down the biggest disappointment in all of college basketball, and they haven't lost since.
SoCon, here's another undefeated team, John. Tennessee State now 10-0, coming off of a nice win at Wofford this week, and a hard-fought win, but a win at the Citadel.
Yeah, they were sweating bullets down in Charleston on Monday night, but certainly a couple of misplays by Citadel in the closing seconds certainly helped East Tennessee State here.
Yeah, the Citadel had them down for most of that game. It was crazy.
One of the things here, very interesting scheduling, Rocco. You had those two games. That Citadel game Monday, they're playing again tomorrow night, Samford. They're playing Saturday, Chattanooga. A lot of games close to each other here. What's that, 5 games in 10 days or something like that for the Buccaneers?
Yeah, and I think it was their 3rd and 6th on Monday. So, yeah, that sounds right. And at least they'll get the Chattanooga-Samford games at home, and those are 2 bottom-of-the-league teams. So as long as they, hold serve there, they should be fine. And then they go to VMI, which is another easy one. You would think it would be easy.
Only one game left to really circle in the schedule is that February 12th game at Greensboro. That may be the game that decides to go undefeated.
That could be, but those last two are also tough games. Wofford and Furman coming into their house. They'll get them at home, but those teams will give them a battle.
Yeah. That Furman game was still awesome.
It was.
Yeah.
And, David, here's the week's schedule coming up. We already mentioned what East Tennessee State has. You also see the rest of the games there, including,
Wofford Citadel. I guess the Citadel starts at 6 o'clock when they play at home. There's got to be a reason for that. But, that game tomorrow starting at 6 o'clock. It's just that I haven't really been watching the Citadel during the week, except when they've been playing, the team, the top of the league team. So I didn't realize that. But who's the under the radar champ that knows the reasoning for that? Because I have no idea why they would start at 6.
They like to get to bed early.
That might be it.
Here's the Southland Conference. A few other scores that are not on the screen include that New Orleans did beat Northwestern State tonight. SFA picked up a win over Houston Baptist. Corpus Christi won on the road at Southeastern Louisiana. So
A few scores that did not make the screen there, but we're now going to have New Orleans and Nichols and SFA as the three teams with two losses in this league, Rocco.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a logjam now, another one of those logjam leagues. But I like Stephen F. Austin still. I mean, they've played well. I also like Southeastern Louisiana, but I think SFA is just another notch above. When Central Arkansas gets on the court with anybody, if Howard is just an incredible player, he's going to be the best player on the floor, and that gives them a chance to knock off anyone. I think they were the last team to beat SFA. So this conference tournament, when we get to the semis, is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's an interesting couple of notes here. Like we said, Southeastern Louisiana, you just mentioned, really bad loss at home tonight to Corpus Christi, actually. That'll be Corpus Christi's second win of the season. But top of that, only eight teams make this conference tournament, so there are a lot of stakes there in the middle and the bottom of the conference, although it looks like three of them are already kind of locked in.
Wow. Well, this is – what's disappointing about this, and it's at campus sites now, is it, or is it?
No, it's still in Katy.
No, it's not. What do you see there? You see 13 teams, and they have the ability to have a quintuple header.
Nope, they play an eight-team tournament. They use the ladder, just kind of like the OVC uses.
Right, and I'm assuming it's men's and women's at the same place, so you've got it's quadruple headers every day, I guess.
Yep.
The SWAC, we have a two-game lead now for Arkansas Pine Bluff, despite the fact that on Saturday the dream ended.
No interest in this conference anymore. I'm for taking their bid away. The dream is over.
Well, then really quickly, upcoming games here, Pine Bluff hosting Alabama A&M and Alabama State can get to 10-1. David doesn't care, says we have to move on.
Well, I do. I would like to say this, and not disingenuous at all. How about the year Grambling's having? Again, the two of the greatest stories in college basketball, Grambling and Savannah State, not eligible.
Actually, coming up Saturday, Southern Grambling. It's a Bayou Classic there, big rivalry game.
Yep, it is.
More so on the football side, but John, let me bring you in here in the Summit League. South Dakota State bounced back from the loss last week, picked up two more wins.
Yep, easier to do against the bottom of the conference, at least as far as getting wins against Fort Wayne and also Omaha.
That was a two-point win. That's Fort Wayne. That wasn't exactly easy, but go ahead. go ahead, John.
Did we lose?
I think we lost. All right, but
John, is he frozen? Oh, he must be frozen. Okay, anyway.
Well, Rocco, let me bring you in here. We got to get Sleeka back. South Dakota State. Hosting North Dakota State this week, I think that's their only game. Meanwhile, South Dakota with a pair of games.
Yeah, and South Dakota, they saw what happens on the road last week when they got killed at Denver. That kind of came out of nowhere for them. And South Dakota State should be okay at home against North Dakota State. I'm sure they'll take care of business there. Mike Dom last night, what a game. He had 38-15, continues to be possibly the UTR player of the year. Summit League, tremendous year. Ken Pomeroy put an article out about them recently. They're now the 12th best conference. pretty incredible for this batch of teams.
Yeah, and South Dakota State for real.
Definitely. I think South Dakota could give teams problems in the tournament too if they end up going.
Yeah.
I think we have John back. So, John, if you're back, you want to take the Sun Belt instead?
Yeah, I know Chad usually likes to hold his breath whenever we get to this part of the show, but it's also worth mentioning that while Louisiana continues their run of perfection, Georgia State and Georgia Southern still continuing to contend as far as getting wins against the Texas schools, with the one exception being Texas State actually stealing a win at Georgia Southern. So that keeps them within sight of the Raging Cajuns for now.
Yeah, they are within sight, but Louisiana still perfect. This week, just one game at rival Louisiana Monroe. I guess the only chance of that is because it is a bit of a rivalry there, David. Possible upset, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, not likely. Not a likely upset.
So let's turn to the final conference involving possibly the best team that we've discussed all night here, Rocco. How about this New Mexico State team? Not only did they win at UMKC, but last night a huge, huge win over in-state rival Northern New Mexico.
I was thinking about how big of a rivalry that game was. David, I don't know if you guys follow the March Madness Twitter account, but they even highlighted it as one of their top 10 plays. There was an alley-oop dunk in that game. They were even treating it as the biggest rivalry game by even adding a highlight to that reel. It was pretty incredible. The win at UMKC in league probably doesn't look like a big deal, but they were missing their best player Lofton for that and still won by 25 on the road in a league game. Kind of shows how deep this team is.
Yeah, Utah Valley picking a home win over Grand Canyon, still staying right there in second place. But this week, again, only one game for New Mexico State hosting Rio Grande. David, you want to call the upset?
No. There are things that won't happen, and that is one of those things.
The other thing that we do need to quickly mention with this league is that with Mississippi Valley State having picked up a win over in the SWAC, we are left with only two teams winless against D1, Delaware State from the MEAC and the Chicago State team. But a fairly healthy RPI of 327 for a team without a win. So worst team in D1, David.
No. That RPI is too good. Like, their losses aren't bad enough to get the centenary.
Well, it's the strength of the schedule. It's also the killer because they're at 116, which is actually in the top third as far as D1 teams go.
Yeah, I mean, they really needed to schedule. They needed to plan this out. They killed themselves.
I think we need a team sheet on this.
But, Chad, I think you should really consider Chicago State just because – that Northwestern game when they were down 44-5 at one point. I mean, that's pretty hard to do for two D1 schools.
It was 55-8 at one point. It was remarkably bad.
And Northwestern is not good.
No.
It may all come down to this March 3rd regular season finale when they host UMKC. That may be their last chance to get a win with only three home games left. So I might want to circle that one. Potential under-the-radar game of the day to end the regular season there. The team of the people going to be a member of the WAC next season. There they are, Cal Baptist, a solid 10-point home win over Azusa Pacific. And David, game of the season coming up on Saturday.
Yes, it is. Concordia coming to Cal Baptist, the team of the people.
That's Thursday, Saturday. Oh. Notre Dame.
Oh, the Notre Dame.
Wow. Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Notre Dame. Wow. I mean, and a very odd road game there for the Irish going out to Cal Baptist. Again, they're transitioning up. They said that for years and years and years, Notre Dame just didn't play anyone out of conference. Really stepping it up here.
Notre Dame at Cal Baptist. And John, I need a scouting report for Monday night also. They got three games this week. What is this Academy of Art? I mean, are we going with a little expressionism, post-impressionistic? What type of contest is it?
Well, first off, I want to make a small correction. It was actually a road win for Cal Baptist, which is something they did actually need. But as far as the Academy of Art, I believe they're located in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. So yep. I don't have their logo. I don't have the logo in front of me.
John, the fact that you even knew that amazes the hell out of me.
But I want to know, are they playing basketball or is it going to be like an art contest?
Like, who can give the best piece of modern art, or maybe some sculptures, Rocco? Well,
whatever it is, they're gonna.
If it's an art contest, the team of the people's in deep trouble, because yeah. You don't want to mess Academy of Art in an art test, art contest. But yeah, they're right down the street here in San Francisco, so I had no idea they were in this conference, though. That's news to me. But the Azusa Pacific win was outstanding, because Azusa Pacific's still ahead of them in the standings, and now they have a season sweep over them.
There we go. Let's do some under the radar 10 lists. I think we can do a drum roll here. Number one team, January 31st, 2018. Should not be too much of a surprise. It is that New Mexico State team.
Ooh, I didn't have them.
It is a surprise. Okay. Coming in right behind them at number two. It actually was fairly close. Western Kentucky at two. Middle Tennessee at three. These may be the only three teams that we're discussing here that have with serious at-large bid possibilities should they win out to their conference tournament title games.
Potentially, but I like some other teams too. This
vote was taken before that game went final tonight, but Loyola Chicago 4 with a loss afterwards.
Yeah, I think they deserve it at large. And I like this team too. I think they deserve it at large if they need it. East Tennessee State on the roll. Oh, Louisiana, love that team. I mean, again, solidly inside the bubble, give them an at large.
Vermont.
Of course, Vermont, like nearly beat Kentucky. They've been blowing through their conference. Dangerous team. How about they deserve an at-large? Buffalo, like their RPI is still top 30. I mean, first place team, top 30 RPI, that's an at-large. South Dakota State, no.
All right. What about number 10 team here, Wright State?
Yes. I mean, again, blowing through the Horizon League, they deserve an at-large.
Our honorable mentions, David. Let's go through them in order. Does Montana deserve an at-large?
Of course.
Belmont.
Yes.
Old Dominion.
Yes.
Savannah State.
An automatic bid.
But not eligible.
We're inviting them to the AC8.
Once again, very disappointed that I'm the only one that put Savannah State on my ballot, but that's our top 10 list for the week.
I'll save that for the final one.
Oh, David, what, go ahead. Got you on the screen now.
Okay, well, when you look at those top, I mean, of course, there's probably only three that are even going to be on the bubble, much less inside of it, and maybe none of them are inside of it by the time that it's over. But where we sit now, I don't recall a year. I think that after the out-of-conference play was over, we were kind of down, or at least I was, on a lot of the under-the-radar teams. But now here we are going into February. In fact, most of you are probably watching this on February 1st. And there are more teams that, while not inside the bubble, that are potentially dangerous than what I've ever felt before. Like Louisiana was number 7, and they're damn good. Vermont's good. Bucknell, who wasn't even in or on it, or were they? Did they come in at number 10? They're not going to have the paper because it took them so long to get going. But, again, this is a team that blew through the conference last year, almost beat West Virginia, and everybody from that team is back. So, I mean, I think you're going to see if all these teams are able to get through and get the automatic bids, and I realize that's a big if because these conference tournaments are kind of crapshoots. You're going to see some really, really competitive 5-12, 4-13, and even 3-14 games this year.
And Rocco, let me go to you for any other final thoughts, but I do want to, before I do so, just really quickly echo what David just said. If we get these 10 teams that we just voted in here in, they are all dangerous teams. But go ahead, Rocco.
They are, yeah. And I'd like to build on that because if, looking at the other side of the bracket, we've got about – I'd go down to Xavier, which might be 6 or 7, depending on your seed list, as really, really strong teams, teams that you would feel pretty comfortable. They'll still take care of a team like a Louisiana, for example. But you start looking at the seed list, at least at this stage, and you got teams from like 8 to 30. You know, any of those teams are going to wind up with the last two seed and then the 3, 4s, and 5s. And that's the matchups we're going to be seeing for these teams that David mentioned. And those are, I mean, that even creates a potential for these teams being favored in Las Vegas. And that's not in a stretch of the imagination. Like if you have a team like an Arkansas, for example, playing Loyola Chicago, I could see Loyola Chicago being favored in Vegas. And so it's pretty cool. It's great for the sport. We love the parity. We wish there was a way these teams could get more at-large bids. That's what we all fight for on here. You look at the KenPom top 70, there's seven of these teams in there, and that doesn't count WCC and some of those other borderline mid-majors. So it's going to be fun to follow as we continue on.
All right, John.
It seems like we're getting to a point where almost every single playing court is going to be named after either a former coach or administrator. And Nicholls State, while they did lose a tough one at home against Southeast Louisiana over the weekend, they did name their floor after Ricky Broussard, who had actually coached there from 1990 through 2002. They did make a two NCAA tournament appearances in that span.
David, you want to finish us off?
Well, I mean, I've already shared all my wisdom with how good the UTR top 10 is.
Okay. So. Well, I guess on that note, amazingly, the puppet doesn't want to speak anymore. So on behalf of John Stalica, Rocco Miller,
Dark David Web Graves, Conspiracy, I'm going to talk Sherwood. About that tomorrow.
Thanks, Joyce. We will be back tomorrow night. We're going to be doing a bracket rundown show, a slightly different format. We're going to be revealing a bracket on the air that may or may not be the identical to the bracket that the NCAA tournament selection committee announces in March. It is possible. So tune in for that, and we'll talk to you again real soon.